Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. Graduation season now is around the corner, so let Job Genius power your job search. Now, Job Genius offers free advice on job searching, resume writing, interviewing, and tips to ace your first day on the job. Just go to expresspros.com/jobgenius today and search Job Genius on YouTube. Now, let this educational video series be your guide for entering the workforce. Now, Job Genius is brought to you by our friends at Express Employment Professionals, the leading staffing company that employs more than 500,000 people a year. And when you're ready to start your job search, well, turn to Express Pros. Apply now at expresspros.com for administrative jobs, including customer service and sales and accounting positions, as well as skilled labor jobs like drivers and forklift operators and welders and CNC programmers. Now, each Express Employment Professional office is locally owned and operated. They never charge a job seeker a penny, no fee. And Express Pros takes pride in connecting the right people with the right company. Just go to expresspros.com. All right, glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. By the way, Linda has failed, I guess, the staff because you had a special request by one of the people that works at Total Traffic, our neighboring affiliate.
I'm sorry. Here. I feel it nothing. What
okay,
are you
well,
talking about?
No, because instead of pizza, we had a request that we buy sushi.
I moved it to a different day.
Okay, but the promise was made by me that I would buy them sushi today. And there's no sushi there at all.
Like I said, I moved. First of all, why do you even care? You don't eat sushi.
Because look at her face. She's all disappointed.
I just gave her chocolate. She looks so sad right now.
I know.
With her chocolate.
Okay, but
she's heartbroken.
By the way, I do not get the sushi fad. I know people think this is crazy. My kids love sushi. Everybody I know loves sushi.
Right. I just said that 5 seconds ago when you were ignoring me.
I could barely swallow a California roll. I mean, honestly, why? What? It's fake crab meat.
It's fake crab. It's not
guacamole.
Even real.
Guacamole. And
it's not
seaweed.
Guacamole. My God. It's
what
not Mexican.
It?
It's got a slice of avocado.
Avocado.
Which is a healthy fat.
That's
you should know what that is. You're a ninja.
All right. Exactly. I you know what I eat every day, so it doesn't
matter. That's right. I do.
Well, why don't you make the thing tomorrow so I don't look like somebody that doesn't
First
keep
of
my
all,
word?
I
it's
made
annoying.
An announcement to everyone. And
I
said
an announcement.
And I said, listen, we're going to do it on Thursday. Thursday's a better day for sushi. It's a fun day. Everybody can be a part of it. I think that we should additionally have, you know, some alcohol involved. And on Thursday, that's okay.
Okay. I see there's a ton of alcohol in front of me.
But I'm not drinking it.
You got 8 bottles of moonshine that people sent us.
Because our listeners are good people.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, can you guys stop drinking during the show and wait until after the show's over, please?
The last few weeks, you should be glad that all these bottles are here.
Well, I think it's amazing. The, what do you call them, cherry one is interesting to me.
We got maraschino cherries.
Maraschino. All right, let me get to the news before I...
Oh, you're done now? You're all done? You finished with me?
North Korea.
North Korea.
North Korea is now threatening to cancel the Trump summit. Now, the media is going insane over the threat to cancel the summit. And they canceled, apparently, I guess the North Korean dictator was going to meet with the South Korean president again, and so on and so forth. Here's the point on all of this. Who cares? The point is we are in a position of strength. We haven't dropped cargo planes loads of cash and other currency like Obama did. We're not invested in this except for the fact, okay, we withdrew a little bit our Navy Strike Force brigades that were off the coast. They can be back there in 24 hours ready to attack Kim Jong-un. So we got 3 hostages for nothing, unlike what other presidents have been able to negotiate. We got Kim Jong-un crossing the DMZ yesterday, inviting the Western media to watch him shut down his nuclear weapons testing program in front of their eyes. And the idea that, well, now he's mad that South Korea and the United States have their annual military drills, that they're just a little pissed off about it. Why do we care? If Kim Jong-un wants peace, he has a chance of peace. If he doesn't, he's not going to be allowed to continue to fire missiles over Japan. And he's not going to be able to build his nuclear program, and his people are going to continue to starve, and we will have gotten our hostages out, and we'll go back to the position we were in the beginning, and we will have lost nothing. we will have gained 3 American hostages. And that, to me, is a win. Now, my prediction is this. Kim Jong-un, he might posture a little more, saber rattle a little more, but he's going to back down and he's going to meet with Trump because every aspect of that meeting has been gone over. And the great embarrassment will be to him, not to the president, because the president gave up nothing. Unlike other presidents that and other liberals, they think that the only way to negotiate with the world's dictators and evil in our time is to bribe them. Bribing dictators and despots and murderers doesn't work. We tried it with Clinton. This is a good deal for the American people. We're going to stop North Korea's nuclear program. We're going to stop it right here. That's it. That's the end of it. Here. And we're going to go, we're going to open have an open dating society with North Korea and the United States. What are you going to do? Whatever. That's Clinton. Clinton's a liar, and Clinton failed miserably. Dropping cargo planes of cash. I used to do that, by the way, for the Clinton routine on
you
the stage.
You dropped cargo planes of cash?
No, I used
Where
to do
I?
The Clinton routine on stage, and I'd go, I want to say hi to all the hot chicks
you used
in the
to?
Audience. And I'd say, if you want, we'll give you a tour backstage after people. I mean, it always worked. You got to admit, you've been there.
It I have been there. Worked.
And then the media says, you know, they'll write, Hannity said this in a Clinton voice. Yeah, because he was, we know who Clinton is. We know who he was.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yeah. So the idea that they're canceling their summit and that they canceled the summit with South Korea, high-level summit, and threatening their meeting with the U.S. is meaningless. And all these people that we never would have gotten to this point if we were weak, like Obama was weak, like Clinton was weak. What is it going to take for liberals to understand bribing and begging people that chant death to America is never, ever, ever, ever going to work? They see nothing but weakness and have contempt for your weakness. You know, I notice what's happening. The president did something that so many presidents before him promised. He kept his word. And yeah, Jerusalem is now the capital of Israel, which it should be. Every country gets to decide where their capital is. This is their historic homeland. That's a historic fact in all of this. And the reality is, well, okay, the $150 billion that Obama used to try and bribe the mullahs in Iran never stopped them. Just last week, they were burning American flags in their parliament, and the mullahs are still threatening death to America, and they're still threatening death to Israel. Now we have, in honor of the president's decision to move the embassy to Jerusalem, Iran has come up with a new way of threatening Israel with destruction. And basically, according to the Washington Free Beacon, a leading Iranian ayatollah vowed in a weekly prayer service in Tehran that the Islamic Republic will turn Tel Aviv and Haifa to rubble, according to a translation of his remarks. Ayatollah's name is Ahmad Khatami, a member of the Iranian Assembly of Experts, which answers to the Iranian Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, and that Iran is strengthening their missile power on a daily basis and on the verge of turning Tel Aviv and Haifa into rubble. By the way, that's never going to happen, because before that happens, the U.S. and Israel will blow them into smithereens. That's what's going to happen when you have people that have strength like Bibi Netanyahu and moral clarity like Netanyahu and Donald Trump. And what's really outrageous in all of this, I've been watching the media coverage, and it has really pissed me off, is the media, their nonstop coverage blaming Donald Trump for what was an average Monday yesterday by Hamas, which is a group whose charter calls for the destruction of Israel. You do understand that Palestinian families that kill Israelis are paid money for the rest of their living days for the murder. It's viewed as a high honor to kill an Israeli or an American. You do know that. And that's part of the reason why I get so infuriated that the media in this country, they're on the wrong side of just about everything. Just like they got the Russia collusion story wrong. I mean, we have new developments on that today that are frankly embarrassing. You know, literally Mueller's indicting a company, one of the Russian bot companies. It wasn't in existence at the time. It didn't exist. Mueller never anticipated these were show indictments to create the image that we found Russia collusion. Okay, they never expected that these companies were actually going to defend themselves, and now they are. And that means they want grand jury materials and testimonies, and you have the Russian company now going to the judge, asking the judge to dismiss Mueller's make-believe charges. I mean, and it only gets worse from there. They didn't even do their due diligence. They were in such a rush to make it look like Trump-Russia collusion, Russian interference in the election. We just had another Senate report last week that comes out and says, no, not one vote was ever impacted because of the, well, because they were playing all sides in this game. They were playing the pro-Trump side and the pro-Hillary side. They've done it to me. They've done it to Fox. They've done it to, you know, Black Lives Matter. They've done it to every group in the country, basically. And this is what Devin Nunes was warning about in an op-ed in 2014 that nobody paid attention to. And in the lead up to the election, Obama lecturing Trump to stop whining because no serious person would ever think our election system could ever be disrupted in any way. And now we got the media back to this other story, the fake news brigade blaming Donald Trump and Israel for the carnage at Gaza's border. I've been to Gaza's border. I've been to the town Sarot. I've been there in the underground, you know, bunker built playgrounds for kids because there's not enough time between a rocket being fired in Gaza and the border town of Sarot. I've been there. Linda's been there. We've all been there. We were there at a housing project, a kibbutz, the day after a missile literally hit it, and you see shrapnel, the maximum amount of damage they put into these rockets, BBs and glass and other shrapnels. So if anyone's anywhere near this missile when it lands, if the Iron Dome doesn't get it, which it usually does, in this case it didn't, then that means they want to inflict as much human casualty and damage and destruction as possible. I've seen it. I've been there. I've been in the tunnels that they built with Israeli cement that was offered to help their people and is used instead to build tunnels to kidnap and kill Israelis or Americans if they can get them. You know, the sophistication of those tunnels is breathtaking. The electricity comes from Israel to put the lighting inside the tunnel, if you can believe it. So much for helping people. Now, these protest groups are organized by Hamas. Hamas is internationally recognized as one of the world's most violent terrorist group. They have in their charter the stated goal, the annihilation of Israel. In 2005, the Palestinian people actually voted to elect Hamas as their government. So you have people who use their chance to vote in a democratic election, elect terrorists who promise to destroy Israel. What more do you need to know here? Why is this even in dispute? And Israeli special forces have to protect their people. And that's what happened. And to be honest, it's just kind of, they don't need an excuse to attack the Israelis. It's happening every day. There have been 10,000 rockets in that town fired in 10 years. So recognizing Jerusalem as the capital is just another excuse for what is ongoing every day and what real life is every day. But of course, we should bow and maybe we should send cargoes of cash and other cargo planes of cash and other currency and see if they'll we can bribe them. If we're nicer to them, they'll finally be nice to us and to Israel. It's never going to work that way, ever. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. Let not your heart be troubled. Don't listen to the, you know, negative media. We've already won a significant battle with North Korea. This is what they do, and this is why, you know, the unpredictability of these tyrants and despots means that's why trust and verify means everything in the end. It is everything. We have some amazing developments today. Well, here, let me tell you why. Let me go to this first, and I'll get into the deep state issue in the next half hour. You know, the president has now agreed to keynote a pro-life gala. How many of you remember during the election that conservatives excoriated me because I said, no, I know Donald Trump. Donald Trump as a businessman in New York, was playing the game. Now, I knew him better than most people then. I'd have private conversations. By the way, I'm never going to divulge any conversations I have with anybody. You know, the fact that the media is so obsessed wanting to know if I talk to him or if I talk to him, what we talk about. If I ever do, I'm never going to tell you, ever. I'm going to the grave with it, unlike some of these other idiots apparently in the White House that think it's all about them. And the leakers are horrible. The president's right. You know, if you get the honor to work in that house, that White House, you are there first to serve the American people. You serve the American people by serving the agenda of the president that got the votes of the American people and helping him fulfill his promises. You know, I just find this whole thing, you know, the palace intrigue stuff, I have no interest in. Getting solutions to our problems, I have an interest in. You know, seeing the potential of a 4.3% GDP growth, as the Atlanta Fed predicts, I like that. I like 11-year confidence high in terms of the country and the direction of the country. I like the lowest unemployment in 14 states, record lows for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and women in the workforce. I like all of that. Record revenues and even a record surplus happened and nobody paid attention. And I like the idea that he kept his promise to withdraw from Iran. Everyone said he's not pro. He's now speaking at the Susan B. Anthony pro-life campaign, Life Gala. Oh, I guess he's pro-choice. He said he evolved and changed. People didn't believe me. I was right again. It's frustrating to me. People have, and they'll never admit they're wrong, especially the never-Trumpers, ever. They won't admit they were wrong. They can't if they're incapable of it. All right, glad you're with us. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We have Newt Gingrich. He's going to weigh in on the 2018 election. He's going to weigh in on these spectacular developments in North Korea, Iran, Jerusalem. Kimberly Strassel, she was the one that broke the story. It looks like an FBI mole was inside the Trump campaign. This is separate and apart from the FISA warrants that were, I would argue, illegally issued. And the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte is going to join us today on a couple of issues. One, of course, he has been trying to secure 1.2 million documents from the Department of Justice. These are the documents that have been slow walked, redactions in the name of national security that are proven false, and just outright obstruction. And he's been doing a good job there. Also, he's going to call our attention to something that's going on in Washington you need to pay very close attention to. There are about 20-plus weak Republicans, amnesty Republicans, and they're trying to get what is called a discharge petition passed, where they will unite with the Democrats to have an up or down vote on the House floor on amnesty. Now, Paul Ryan needs to do his job. This is a slap in the face to him, Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, and to the other Republicans that want to support the Goodlatte bill, which, by the way, would fully fund the border wall, the one the president supports. It also would end the visa lottery. It would protect, by the way, nuclear families. So you're not going to get into that lie that liberals like to tell, the left Democrats like to tell. It would be more of a merit-based system in America. It would build the wall, use advanced technology, tactical infrastructure, secure points of entry, put more boots on the ground, use the National Guard, a biometric entry-exit system, a border security trust fund. They would make E-Verify mandatory, crack down on sanctuary cities and states, hello, California, facilitate cooperation with local law enforcement. It would be include Kate's Law, which we need, detain dangerous individuals, combat asylum fraud, keep out and remove dangerous criminals, visa overstays, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's the Goodlatte bill. Now you have 20, about 20. All they need is 23 defections. So they're a little closer than I would like. So if you want to call Washington today, you can. We'll give you the number. I only ask that you be polite and say to your congressman or woman, support the Goodlatte bill, the bill the president supports. 202-224-3121. Say you want to fund the border wall. Say you want Kate's Law. Say you want to end the visa lottery. Remember, the president even gave on the issue of Dreamers. He was willing to negotiate, but the Democrats want this as a 2018 campaign issue, clear and simple. They don't want a solution. They want to use it as a wedge issue for 2018 in the midterms. Now, unfortunately for them, the majority of the American people want the border wall built and support the president. And now we got to control our borders. We know what happens. I've been down there 12 times. You've heard that speech before. So if you want to call the number of the Capitol switchboard, your congressman or woman, it's 202-224-3121. Tell him to support the Goodlatte bill. And he'll join us later in the program. You know, I told you the story. This almost is so much. There's so much happening. It's actually hard to believe. I went through this yesterday. I won't go through all of this yet again today. But you see, the president kept his promise on Israel. The president speaking at a pro-life gala, keeping his word there. The president kept his word on withdrawing from the horrible Iranian agreement. The president kept his promise on tax cuts. The president even got rid of the employer mandate as it relates to Obamacare. It's not his fault John McCain voted the way he did. And John McCain had promised that he would vote to repeal and replace at the time. By the way, I wish him well. I'm not getting involved in all of that. I tried to help John McCain out a lot when he ran in 2008. Would have been a better president than Barack Obama. Now, with that said, I'm not sure why there's a lot of hostility between players here. So I just know he's sick and we wish him well. Our thoughts and prayers are with him. Now, this was historic what happened in Jerusalem yesterday. So many presidents promised, nobody delivered. And what happened was history in the making. No Democrats showed up, by the way. I guess they were too busy planning on impeachment and planning on raising your taxes and undoing the tax cuts that have led to record revenues to the federal government and even monthly surpluses, which is pretty astonishing in every way imaginable. You know, and then they're blaming literally the president and Israel for Hamas's action. Well, Hamas is a known terrorist organization whose charter calls for the destruction of Israel and killing Americans. And they pay families literally that kill Israelis. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And you got little Rocket Man. He's now inviting journalists to watch his country dismantle their nuclear test sites and facilities. I know they're threatening to cancel the summit. I'm not moved by it at all, to be honest. And we got the three hostages back. The missiles stopped being fired over Japan and threatening Guam and threatening the continental United States. He did cross the DMZ. And again, the three hostages. And if the president needs to go back to a military force and presence in the Korean Peninsula, we'll do that, too. If the sanctions need to continue, that'll happen, too. So that's going to be, in the end, up to them. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, laid out everything with Kim Jong-un. He's met with him now twice to prepare the way to discuss possible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And by the way, his words were complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization. That's what we're demanding. So the idea that they're, you know, I don't think it's really second thoughts. I think their feelings are hurt because they know that they're literally getting their clocks cleaned and that they've lost. And it's kind of hard for one's ego to admit they lose. It's part of the human condition. But I told you the story yesterday. This is a huge story by John Solomon. The headline was on Drudge: Mueller may have a conflict that leads directly to a Russian oligarch. Now, there's been some coverage of this, but not in this detail. Now, there's parts of this, and I said it last night on TV, and a lot of people were kind of surprised by it, but I'll explain in a second. Now, in 2009, the FBI director was Robert Mueller, and he was directly involved in a plan with a Russian oligarch. It's the same one that happens to be involved in the Paul Manafort case, and yet they didn't mention it, their conflict, and the need to at least acknowledge that Mueller was involved with this very specific guy. What's his name? Oleg
Deripaska.
Deripaska. Oleg Deripaska is his name. And Deripaska, literally Mueller, and I give Mueller credit on this, Mueller somehow got Deripaska to spend $25 million to help secure the release of a retired FBI agent and a CIA agent by the name of Robert Levinson. He was captured in Iran. Now, he's been missing 11 years. I do not want an American left in Iran without the maximum efforts being used to get our guys home. That's how I feel. Now, interestingly, they came close to actually making this happen. And guess where it stopped every time? In the State Department of Hillary Clinton. And eventually the efforts were given up because of the conflict within our own government. To the credit of the FBI guys, they wanted to get our CIA captive out. And they worked it out. How they were able to convince the Russian oligarch, Deripaska, to give $25 million, I don't know, and I don't really care. And I know there are people saying, well, laws were broken, et cetera. I don't care. At that point, they were talking about, well, you can't accept, somebody can't work for the American government without getting paid, and you can't accept the money from the, all right. When you're dealing with high-level negotiations to release an American CIA agent, I kind of want the rules to be put aside. And you're saying, Hannity, you're advocating law-breaking. No, I'm advocating saving an American hero and helping his family. And he put his ass on the line for us by even going over there and doing his hard work. And I want to get this guy home. But so it turns out, though, that Oleg Deripaska is the same Russian billionaire the special counsel Robert Mueller is investigating in the Russian probe. Now, Alan Dershowitz and Jonathan Turley, they're absolutely right. And quoted in the article of John Solomon that this previous relationship is a massive conflict of interest. And we reached out to the special counsel's office, but they hate me, so they're not going to respond to anything. And in another stunning setback for Mueller, you had, you know, two Fridays ago, the federal judge T.S. Ellis III calling out his probe is nothing more than a witch hunt. And that the only reason you're going after the 2005 tax fraud case that already been closed on Paul Manafort is because you want to find something to prosecute or impeach Donald Trump. Let's just call it for what it is. And by the way, the Manafort case had to do with the Ukraine, not with Russia. And the judge talked about unfettered power. We don't want any one branch of government, not even the judiciary, not the legislative branch, not the executive branch, with unfettered power. Now we find out that, remember, the 13 Russian bot companies, and we knew in 2014, Devin Nunes told us, the whole world in an op-ed, that they wanted to sow discord in this country and influence our elections. Nobody paid attention to it. Anyway, so there were the 13 indictments by Mueller's special counsel. Nobody expected that any of the Russian companies indicted, because we don't have an extradition agreement with Russia, that case was ever going to amount to anything. Well, it turns out these Russian companies are now responding. And they're literally calling the charges baseless. They're saying Mueller hasn't even shown. In one case, Mueller mentions one of the companies that he's indicting and saying that the company intentionally broke the law. Law and Crime, that's one of Dan Abrams' websites, is reporting that the attorney from this Russian company wants to see Mueller's secret grand jury instructions, which legally he would have a right to at some point, and that the Daily Wire pointed out in a report saying that the court transcript showed over the weekend that Mueller indicted a Russian company that didn't exist. A little sloppy work from the special counsel's office. And according to the Daily Wire, the lawyer for the company said, Your Honor, I think what we're dealing with here is a situation of the government having indicted the proverbial ham sandwich. That company didn't exist as a legal entity during the period alleged by the government. If at some later time they show me that it did exist, we'd probably represent them. But for purposes of today, no, we don't represent them. Andy McCarthy had a great line. He said, one thing you never want to do is to indict in a case that you're not prepared to try. Mueller's never been prepared to try this case. He thought he's going to throw out the indictment, the headlines, Russia, 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 go out with it, and that they'd never respond. And Kim Strassel, who's going to join us in the next hour, she's pointing out that the serious questions, what time is Kim Strassel on? She's actually on in our final hour today. That the FBI planted a mole inside of the Trump campaign. Now, I have a pretty good idea who this person is. My sources have told me. I'm not going to go with it yet. There are some people, Linda, you've noticed on the web, have picked up who it is. Let's just say something very similar with me. There is. You know exactly what I'm talking about. It's not as nefarious as it sounds. There's a rampant uptick of, you know, unmaskings. Now the FBI is lying to the judges on the FISA abuse. They didn't tell the judges that it was uncorroborated, unverified. Clinton bought and paid for it. A foreign national put it together. Russian lies were put in it. They got warrants for a year to spy on a Trump campaign. You got the 350% uptick in the unmasking scandal, you know, during the 2016 election year by the Obama administration. You know, the criminal leaking of Michael Flynn's name. You know, now we know Michael Flynn never lied to the FBI. Why did he agree to that? I have no idea. You know, now you've got members of Congress demanding answers about Comey's conflicting testimony over Flynn and Comey telling Congress that he didn't think Flynn lied, but that's what Mueller ended up charging Flynn with. Then we've got information, you know, Rod Rosenstein, others in the DOJ, you know, they're redacting in the name of national security. Turns out it's not national security. They're stonewalling, slow walking, delaying any chance they can, basically, you know, obstructing Congress from doing their constitutional job. It's pathetic. And why is the DOJ and people like Rosenstein, who's totally conflicted out of this by being a witness in this case, because he's the one that recommended firing Comey, he signed off on one of the subsequent renewal warrants, FISA warrants on Carter Page. That went on for a year. Four judges were lied to and given unverified, uncorroborated, which violates the law and FBI protocols, information. And nobody ever told the judges Hillary paid for all that crap, for the lies that were told in it. Unbelievable times. Now, anyway, the Russian company is asking the judge to dismiss Mueller's make-believe charges. Nunes and Gowdy are now accusing the DOJ of retaliating for the investigation into the Steele dossier. And a former Trump lawyer, Michael Dowd, backs the claim that General Flynn is innocent. We've been right the whole time. The media, stormy, Russia has been wrong the whole time. It's unbelievable how lazy and what a bunch of sheep these people are and how corrupt they are. It's unbelievable. Newt Gingrich coming up. We have Kimberly Strassel coming up. Also, the House Judiciary Chairman Bob Goodlatte and Heather Nauert, who works at the State Department, has announced Kim Jong-un, he previously said he understands the need for these exercises and they're legal and planned in advance. At hour two, Sean Hannity Show, write down our toll-free number. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. Joining us now with a preview of 2018, the incredible history that is unfolding before our eyes, is former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. How are you, sir? Are you in Italy or are you here?
No, I'm in Washington, actually.
I can't believe it. I mean, I know. With Callista, you've been spending a lot of time in the Holy See, and what?
Well, we came back. We were really very fortunate. We went to Wisconsin to see her 86-year-old mother for Mother's Day and had a wonderful time there. So we really feel we've had a great time, and now I'm here working in the nation's capital, and then this coming Friday and Saturday, my granddaughter Maggie is going to graduate from high school, so we'll be in Atlanta for a great event. We're looking forward to it.
Let me ask you about this. I mean, let's just start with foreign policy. You know, it wasn't that long ago that the media and Democrats were claiming that Donald Trump was going to get us into a nuclear war with little Rocket Man because he was calling him out. He put sanctions in place. He put six Navy strike forces off the coast of North Korea. And lo and behold, the missiles stopped firing. We see Kim Jong-un cross the DMZ. He released three hostages. He's now talking about denuclearization and inviting the West to go see him literally disband his nuclear testing site. Is this peace through strength? What made this turn around so dramatically?
Well, of course, you're using the old Reagan slogan, and it's absolutely true. Now, remember, there's another Reagan slogan, trust but verify. So I think this is a great dance. I think Trump deserves enormous credit. And I think lots of people around the world are beginning to recognize that this is real, that Trump understands something about how to negotiate and something about how to deal with people like Kim Jong-un. But I also think he may have reached, the dictator may have reached the conclusion that the future of his regime was safer in a relationship with the United States than it was relying on the Chinese. And I think this could be a historic moment. We'll know better when they meet in Singapore and what will be truly an extraordinary event.
Isn't part of the reason this happened is that the great relationship the president built up with the president of China. I mean, if you recall, they were supposed to have 15-minute meetings that went on for over 5 hours. And the first strike that the president made on Syria when Assad first used chemical weapons against his own people, that was happening while he was sitting next to the president of China, and he informed him that night that that had happened.
I've always thought that that moment was decisive in President Xi's understanding that Donald Trump was the real deal. This is not Barack Obama. This is not some normal establishment Republican. This is a very tough guy. And I think that plays a part of this. President Xi is convinced that over time, China will be our genuine competitor. But he knows that as of today, they're not. And so he's been very careful. And I think that he put a lot of pressure on North Korea. Now, we have, as you know, huge fights underway about trade policy, about the South China Sea. I mean, there are a lot of ways in which we have this complicated dance where we are putting pressure on the Chinese while we're working with them on North Korea. And to do both simultaneously is a pretty remarkable thing to watch.
Well, and the Chinese, I know everybody's been talking about one specific deal, but they forget that the Chinese president already gave on tariffs as it relates to automobiles and intellectual property rights, which is another huge concession, because I don't think we want a trade war, nor do they want one. And I think the president, the constant negotiator that he is, he never had any intention of a trade war. He just had an intention of negotiating a better deal, and it's happening.
Yeah, and my guess is, this is outsider now. I have no secret information. But my guess is
you've been an insider your whole life. What do? You know everybody.
Well, but I'm just I know a lot.
Wait, that's not a fair statement. It sounds bad. You've been an outsider that knows people on the inside. That's more fair because you literally. Well, I think you were as iconoclastic back in '94 as Trump is today.
Oh, I think that's right. And Reagan and Trump both had the same ability, as did Margaret Thatcher, that you could be in power without being in the establishment. In fact, I'm thinking about writing a piece that says the most important job Donald Trump has is to remain Donald Trump, because all the pressures of the establishment and all the effort to, you know, seduce him into becoming normal and reasonable and part of the team, you know, the longer he can just be Donald Trump. And this is, of course, used to be true with Reagan, when they used to say, those of us who are conservative would say, let Reagan be Reagan. It's a very similar pattern here. Trump being Trump is astonishing. The things that they've achieved, just take the last week. As you know, because you were there, I authored the original bill which moved the embassy to Jerusalem.
Correct.
And it had a clause in it that said that the president could sign a national security waiver and postpone it. Trump, every candidate who ran said, I'm going to move the embassy. They got into office. Then the State Department talked him out of it. Trump arrives, and now he's kept his word. So, one, you have the embassy opening in Jerusalem. Two, you have the president getting out of the Iranian deal just as he said he would during the entire campaign, despite all the pressure of the Europeans. Three, you have Kim Jong-un saying, oh, why don't we get together? And by the way, I want to invite people to come and watch me start taking apart my nuclear weapons program. I mean, all these things are happening in the same time frame. And at the same time, the economy now, somebody made a point today that 5 of the 6 best months of Latino employment in American history have all occurred in the last year under Trump.
It's actually better than that. We now have the lowest unemployment ever recorded in 14 states, the lowest unemployment ever, a record for African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans, women in the workforce. Consumer confidence is at an 11-year high. The Atlanta Fed is predicting for the second quarter over 4.3% growth. I mean, I don't know if that's going to come true, but certainly it would be a massive story if we hit that number.
Well, and I can tell you from being in Wisconsin with Calista and her mother over the weekend, everywhere we went, there were help wanted signs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a totally different economy than the economy of Barack Obama.
You know, one of the things that I've always said, and this is why I was so frustrated with the Republicans, and I've used words like, you know, spineless and feckless and visionless and a watered-down version of the Democrats, because, you know, they made their promise on repeal and replace. They couldn't deliver after 7 years of promises. We made some progress because of the president, not because of them. The president, for example, he kept his word on moving the embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. He kept his word. He is now withdrawing from this bad Iranian deal. The president, by the way, there were so many questions about whether he was pro-life or not. He's now going to keynote a pro-life gala. Most people aren't aware of that. And he promised that he'd turn the economy around. It's happening. He promised that he would confront world leaders. It's happening. And as a result, where in the generic ballot, the Democrats in February had a 17-point lead, it's down to a 1-point lead, according to Reuters.
Yeah, I think this could end up being a surprisingly good election because, and as you know, I have a new book coming out called Trump's America, and that's the key thing. It's not just Trump personally, but Trump represents millions and millions of people, for example, who believe in the work ethic, who think it's a good thing to get off food stamps and go get a job, people who think it's good to stand up for America. It's good to be proud of being an American. And I think all of these things are coming together in a way which I marvel at this. I mean, as you know, I've been involved in this business a long time. I think I'm reasonably competent at it. But I watched Trump do things I didn't think were doable and pull it off again and again and again. And I think we're living through a historic period.
Isn't it a lot? I think you referred to it earlier, is a lot of the complaints. I don't believe the president's a nationalist, and I don't believe he's a populist. I think he governs as a conservative. His tax cuts were conservative. Neil Gorsuch was an originalist. Energy independence, how long, you know, drill here, drill now, pay less. Or securing our borders, or peace through strength, or, you know, tell me where he is not Reagan-esque in his policies. Tell me where the difference is, not even on trade. I never believed he wanted to ignite a trade war. He's a constant negotiator. And guess what? All the countries are now negotiating, and it's going to work out better for the American people.
And by the way, even on the border and immigration, if you go back and read Reagan's diary, he says in 1987 that the reason he signed the Simpson-Mazzoli bill is that we had to get control of our southern border.
Well, he said
Reagan would actually have approved what Trump's doing.
Well, actually, he also later referred to that as one of the biggest mistakes in his career.
Because the Congress didn't follow through. They promised him if he would sign amnesty for what they thought 300,000, turned out to be 3 million people, they promised they'd give him a green card program for legal workers to come part-time, and they would control the border.
But that's
Congress failed to keep both.
That's the old, we'll raise your taxes and we'll cut spending later, and the spending cuts never happen. I mean,
exactly.
You know, it's a typical Washington dance that you have going on. At this point, though, I mean, there's a lot of good articles out here. For the Democrats, they're kind of in a bad position because this is the position they're in. For them to get their power back, the economy has to suddenly turn back to where we were with Obama. I don't think that's going to happen, but they almost have to pray that that happens. Or they're going to count on Robert Mueller with this witch hunt of his, which I would argue is imploding before our very eyes. They got to hope that that damages the president enough, or that they've got to hope that the president stops making peace around the world, because if these deals fall apart, then that's going to be good for them politically. It's not an enviable position to run on. Nancy Pelosi says, I'll raise your taxes. We're not going to say it, but we'll impeach Donald Trump. Just stop saying it publicly.
Right. I think actually one of the Republican campaign devices around September 15th should be to send every American a picture of Nancy Pelosi and her quote that she promises to raise your taxes, and just say, do you really want to take this risk? And I don't think the Democrats will win control of the House with her as the Democratic leader. By the way, I don't know if you saw it, and I have not validated this, but apparently on Twitter, the advisor to the foreign policy spokesman for Iran tweeted today that if the Europeans don't step up and put pressure on Trump, that they will release the names of the politicians they bribed.
Yeah, that I saw that story. Yeah.
I mean, if that's true, whole thing is just going to, the lid's going to come off the top.
I think there's going to be a lot of interesting names on that list, don't you think?
Well, I would think so. Look, I think it's so astonishing that the possibility exists that there's a list like that.
First, we had an unverified, uncorroborated Hillary Clinton DNC bought and paid for dossier created by a foreign national citing Russian and Russian government sources. That's bad enough to manipulate the American people in a lead up to a campaign. Then we find out FISA courts were lied to not once. They were presented information that was never verified, and never told Hillary paid for it. And that became the bulk of information to get a FISA warrant and three subsequent renewals. Now we've got report after report that, in fact, that there was an FBI spy inside the Trump campaign on top of the FISA abuses. I want to get your reaction to that. And overall, Robert Mueller and this never-ending witch hunt.
Well, I think Robert Mueller is drifting towards sort of the crisis of his entire operation. He's got, as you know, he has a deadline in Arlington, Virginia, from a federal judge to turn over the unredacted, complete language of the Rosenstein memo that granted him authority, something which justice has been fighting bitterly against turning over to the Congress. And this federal judge is, I think, potentially going to throw out.
Yeah, T.S. Ellis III. I mean, that beatdown was, I think, the biggest judicial beatdown I've ever seen in my life.
Right. So that's out there now as a time bomb. Second, he indicted a Russian company, which has now dared him to try them, because if they get him to try them, they get the right of discovery to dig into his files. And the Justice Department now is on the horns of dilemmas. Our friend Andy McCarthy, a great former Justice Department attorney who tried terrorists, has written, there's an old rule, never indict unless you're prepared to try. And if they're not, if this whole thing was a PR stunt, then...
Oh, no, these were faux indictments that they never thought they were ever going to be challenged. Did you know that the defense for the Russian, quote, bot companies, they actually said they indicted a company that didn't exist during this time frame? Meaning Robert Mueller's group. They indicted right. A company that didn't exist. How embarrassing is that?
Right. And see, the whole thing was, I think, a public relations gimmick, which has blown up in their face.
Yep.
Then, as you point out, we now have this story in the last two or three days that has been growing, and we'll see what comes out of it. But if they actually planted, if the Federal Bureau of Investigation actually planted somebody in a presidential campaign as a spy, that would be astonishing. And all of these things, I think, put the top leadership of the Justice Department and the top leadership of the FBI in much greater danger than Trump. I mean, I think all the evidence we've had so far with Comey and others is that they broke a lot more laws than anything that has been suggested about the president.
That's what I've been calling the 2018 boomerang, and I think we've been over the target now for a long time, and everything that we've been reporting is being proven true. Mr. Speaker, we love having you back. Our best to Calista, and congratulations again to her. We appreciate you being with us. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. When we come back, the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte on immigration and on the demand that documents that are subpoenaed be handed over. That's next.
Here with us today is the family of Border Patrol agent Rogelio Martinez from El Paso, Texas. Agent Martinez, known as Roger to his friends and family, worked on a dangerous part of the southern border, a part that you've been reading about so much lately, and a part that we're doing a lot with. Agent Martinez took immense pride and joy in serving his country. As a Border Patrol agent, he was extremely proud of what he did. Every day he would go to work and risk his life to keep America safe. Roger said he wanted to prevent terrorists and drugs from coming into our country. We all do. And we're going to get it done. But that's exactly what he did. He bravely confronted the cartels, the smugglers, the human traffickers, the gangs that threaten our communities. One night last November, Agent Martinez died in the line of duty. It was horrific. It was violent. And he was brave. To Agent Martinez's mom, Eliva, his son, Sergio, and the entire Martinez family, Roger's profound and unselfish love of country is an inspiration to every American.
All right, that was the president earlier today, 24 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. And that was the president. We're going to play a lot more of the speech later in the program today, talking about, in this particular case, a fallen Border Patrol agent Martinez, calling on Congress to secure our borders, support our agents, stop sanctuary cities, shut down policies that release violent criminals. And that sadly happens. Now, what's happening in Congress, and we've been so busy with all of the deep state investigations we've been doing, but there are a bunch of liberal Republicans that have been pushing for a discharge petition, which would allow them to go straight to the House floor with an up or down vote, but not on funding the border wall that the president is demanding. No, they would rather have amnesty pushed because they think that that is the ticket to winning in 2018. But there is a good plan that has been out there, and it's being pushed by the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte. It's a common sense approach to immigration. It would mitigate what these open borders people are trying to do and these amnesty people are trying to do. And very simply, it would end the visa lottery program. It would still protect nuclear families, reduce the overall immigration levels in the country, increase security at the border, build the border wall, use advanced technology, you know, makes use of E-Verify, makes that mandatory, and the list goes on. Anyway, Chairman Congressman Goodlatte joins us now. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you. It's great to be with you and your great listeners.
Let's start with the discharge petition of some of your liberal Republican colleagues.
Well, it is good that this issue has moved back to the front burner, but it is very bad to sign a discharge petition and allow the Democrats to take control of the process, because their plan is very simple. You provide 190 Democratic votes with 30 or 40 Republicans, and voila, suddenly you have a DACA bill, an amnesty bill, without what the president has asked for, and that is the means to secure the border, to close the loopholes on the interior of the country, and to change the way our immigration system works toward one that's merit-based rather than these extended family programs that we now give, 1.1 million green cards a year. Less than 10% of those go to people based upon a job skill or a job offer. It's got to change, and the president needs to help the House, and then once we get it through the House, the Senate, to do the right thing here. And
in other words, you're talking about a merit-based system, a system similar to, say, Australia or New Zealand or Canada or many other countries. And more importantly, now, the president had spoken at great length when the next budget battle comes up in September that he's willing to shut the government down on this particular issue. The question is, here you're offering an end to the visa lottery system. The president, against the will of a lot of conservatives, was willing to give on the Dreamers aspect of this as long as he got full funding for the wall. Where are the majority of your fellow Republicans here? Because if 23, as I understand it, liberal Republicans go along with this discharge petition, that means that they'll have an up or down vote on amnesty and they won't even discuss border security.
Well, that's right. The overwhelming majority of Republicans in the House support my bill, the bill that you just very accurately described. And we're close on the number. But what's happened here is that a few have hijacked the process, and we've got to get back to the idea that we need to negotiate something with those members to get a Republican majority in the House and work with the president to pass something and then send that over to the Senate. We're close, but we're not there yet. And we're willing to work with anybody. We've made changes to the bill.
Where is the leadership in this? Because, this makes, people like Paul Ryan, Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise look awful if, in fact, 23 Republicans defect like this.
That's right. They support the bill, and they have been pushing members.
No, they support your bill.
That's right.
Yeah, but are they working hard? I heard there were 19 Republicans now. That means they need four more. That's too close.
They only need four or five more, and they need to get a consensus in our conference. Otherwise, we're going to have a deeply divided Republican Party going into this election, which would be very, very harmful in the election. And our base is not going to be happy if a small number of Republicans join with Democrats to pass something here that doesn't secure our borders and doesn't address the problems in the interior of our country with illegal immigration.
If I could switch gears on you, you have been doing a phenomenal job as it relates to what I think is the biggest obstruction I've ever seen in my lifetime, and that is Congress has, we have a checks and balances system, we have co-equal branches of government, Congress has constitutional oversight authority. You have it in the House Judiciary Committee, and yet we've seen nothing but stonewalling, false redactions in the name of national security that get proved otherwise later, and just a downright refusal to turn over documents related to really important matters like, oh, was there a spy in the Trump campaign or FISA abuse or any of the other shenanigans that were taking place among some of the top echelon, at not rank and file, but some of these top people like Andrew McCabe and Comey and Strzok and Page and others, as it relates to, I think, more than misconduct, probably lawbreaking.
Well, your description is very concerning. And the good news is...
Is my description
finally,
right, though? That's the more important question.
Yeah, and we finally have an agreement with the Department of Justice. We have our investigators from the House Judiciary Committee and Trey Gowdy and the House Oversight Committee over at the Department of Justice right now reviewing the documents that we subpoenaed, 1.2 million documents, unredacted. And then if we want those documents, we identify the ones we want. If they do have a legitimate reason for redacting something, part of an investigation that's going on or something like that, we get it. But we know what's been redacted as opposed to not knowing, which is where we have been up until now. So we're making progress in that regard.
Is the 1.2 million documents you refer to the same documents that the inspector general has had access to and we're awaiting his report? I'm not sure why we're delayed yet again. Do you know when we can expect this?
We're told we're going to see them by the end of this month. But, of course, we were expecting them in April. So hopefully we are going to see them within the next
Let me guess.
Weeks.
We'll see it on the Friday before Memorial Day when nobody's paying attention?
Well, we're going to pay very close attention, and we're anxious to see that report. And we think the Inspector General has done some good work here. But, yes, the answer to your question is we have access to all of those documents except for the transcripts of grand jury testimony, which we are not entitled to have.
Understood. Now, why do you think there has been such slow walking? I'll take you back to one particular instance, and I referred to this in my conversation with Newt Gingrich earlier, and that is we never would have had the Nunes memo if Rod Rosenstein had his way, because Rod Rosenstein was begging Paul Ryan at the 11th hour not to turn over the documents that eventually became the memo on FISA abuse. Then, of course, we got the Grassley-Graham memo that talked about the bulk of the application for the first FISA warrant was, in fact, the Steele dossier, unverified, uncorroborated dossier, using a foreign national as a source who got Russian sources, and Clinton paid for it. Do you believe that FISA court judges were lied to in the original application and three subsequent applications? Were they lied to? Were they given unverified information? Was there a lie by omission by not telling the judges that Hillary paid for it?
I have seen the FISA court applications, and in my opinion, they were not sufficient for the issuance of those
warrants.
And the fact of the matter is that they were, I think that the Nunes memo is accurate in pointing out that it was not disclosed to the court, the source of this information, that it was bought and paid for by...
Well, let me ask the question another way.
...and the Democratic National Committee.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back more with the House Judiciary Committee Chairman, Bob Goodlatte. By the way, get your congressman on board or congresswoman, 202-224-3121. All right, as we continue with the House Judiciary Committee Chairman, Bob Goodlatte, and, of course, his immigration bill is the one that we want passed, not the one pushed by these liberal Republicans, this amnesty bill. Were these judges misled? In other words, if you know that, in other words, doesn't the FISA law require verification, sir? Doesn't FBI protocol require verification? If you know one campaign paid for it and it's not verified, how do you ever go and present that in this particular case to a FISA judge, knowing we have Fourth Amendment constitutional protections against unreasonable search and seizure, and not give the full information to the judge? I don't believe any judge would ever have granted this had they known the truth about it.
I believe that's correct. And while we still have much more digging to do and much more facts to bring out, I think that is a very concerning thing, and it is why this investigation needs to continue. And coupled with the fact that if you look at how the FBI back in 2016 and 2017. There's a lot of personnel changes since then, but 2016 and into 2017, how they handled the investigation into matters related to Hillary Clinton and how they handled the investigation into matters related to Donald Trump is shockingly different. And we cannot allow that to happen in future elections. 2020 is coming toward us, and that's why we have to continue.
What would happen to me if I violated the Espionage Act and I deleted 33,000 subpoenaed emails, acid washed my hard drive, and then broke up my devices that may have had those emails with a hammer or had somebody do it? Would I be in trouble?
You'd be in big trouble.
Big trouble. So I'm not allowed to do that.
No, sir.
Uh-huh. And then what about the whole issue of a potential spy that we're reading about every day within the FBI, a spy within the Trump campaign, an FBI spy in the Trump campaign? What are your thoughts on that? And apparently, go ahead.
I don't have anything I can share with you at this point. But again, another reason why this investigation into how the FBI handled things in 2016 into 2017 is critically important. It is not just, the election's over, we should go on and forget about that. This is about every American's civil liberties, every American's privacy, and every American's right to be assured that the world's premier law enforcement organization is not going to do business like that again.
Congressman, the greatest goal of my family, and all four of my grandparents came from Ireland, was, and so many of my family served in law enforcement, but the top echelon, the greatest respect was the FBI. And I do respect every rank and file guy in the FBI. That's why this is, for me personally, a heartbreaking story. Let me go back to the issue of this important immigration.
Thousands of them every day keep us safe.
Every day. Every day.
Terrorist attacks. They are great people.
And that goes for the CIA intelligence officers as well. We're talking about a few.
I met with an FBI agent this morning who was about the business of doing her job.
Let me ask you one more time. How can people help as it relates to getting the funding of the wall and ending the visa lottery and getting the Goodlatte immigration bill, the good one, no pun intended, passed?
Well, I think they need to do two things. One, I think they need to let members of Congress know that this needs to be handled by the Republicans in the Congress, and they should not turn the floor over to Democrats by signing a discharge petition, and they should let all members of Congress know they're concerned about that, and they need to let the president know they're behind him in his efforts to secure our borders and fight illegal immigration in the interior of our country. And that he needs to hold firm on this because he is critical to this, and he does support this legislation.
All right, Chairman Goodlatte of the House Judiciary Committee, the phone lines for Congress, if you want them, are 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. And if you can ask your congressman or woman, be polite to please pass the Goodlatte bill as it relates to immigration, the one the president's supporting. Mr. Chairman, thank you for being with us. We appreciate all your hard work.
Thanks, Sean.
800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number, News Roundup, Information Overload. Kimberly Strassel on the FBI spy within the Trump campaign. She broke that story wide open. She's next.
Coming up next, our final News Roundup and Information Overload Hour.
What we're trying to do is get the documents to figure out, did they actually have, what methods were used to open this counterintelligence investigation.
If that is true, if there is a spy.
And we don't normally believe he's telling the truth, but in this case, we think he's telling the truth.
You really have a problem with his veracity?
I think that if you look at what he said and then how he tried to walk it back and they tried to plant a story in the Washington Post to walk it back, which is typical what they do. It makes it look like it happened.
If there was a spy, though, what does that mean for Fusion GPS?
Well,
or for Christopher Steele?
Well, I think what it really means, I think it will look badly on the Department of Justice and the FBI on how they conducted this investigation.
Right.
That's what we're trying to get to the bottom of. We're trying to put clarity and sunlight for the American people so they know everything that happened on how this investigation began.
It kind of sounds as if your congressional investigators got the information regarding this secret source, it sounds like that might call into question the narrative we've heard so far. It's like, oh, really? It didn't happen like that at all.
Well, I think if the campaign was somehow set up, I think that would be a problem, right? If there were somehow meetings that occurred and all this was a setup, because we have yet to see any credible evidence or intelligence that led to the opening of this investigation.
By you saying that, it makes it sound like you believe Donald Trump was framed.
Well, look, I believe that they didn't have that. Well, first of all, I believe they never should have opened a counterintelligence investigation into a political party. Counterintelligence investigations are very rarely do they happen. And when they do happen,
right,
you have to be very careful because you're using the tools of our intelligence services, mm-hmm, and relationships with other countries in order to spy on a political campaign. Probably not a good idea.
All right, glad you're with us. Final hour free-for-all, Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to join us now. That was Fox and Friends and Steve Doocy interviewing Devin Nunes of the House Intel Committee, saying that we believe that Glenn Simpson's testimony that there was a mole within the Trump campaign. And if the Trump campaign was set up, well, that would be a problem. And then he talked about he has a problem with a counterintelligence operation of a political party and how rare that would be. Now, a lot of this got started thanks to the Wall Street Journal's Kimberly Strassel, who's a great reporter, columnist. And the headline of this article was, did the FBI place a mole inside the 2016 Trump campaign? Now, Kimberly Strassel joins us now. Kimberly, how are you? You've been doing amazing work.
Good. Hi, Sean.
You've been doing really amazing work. I really applaud you. This is a big part of the story, especially in light of all the FISA abuse, unmasking abuse, and a lot of other issues that I think every American should be concerned about because it raises constitutional questions. Was there a mole inside the 2016 Trump campaign?
Well, it sounds as though there's very good reason to believe so. Look, listen to Mr. Nunes. And I think it's very telling, Sean, when he sent over that classified letter and his subpoena to the Justice Department and said, tell me everything you know about this person. The easy answer for the Department of Justice would have been, we don't have anything on that person. But that's, of course, not what they said. Instead, they got into another round of intense obstructionism, saying we are not going to hand over anything to do with this person. And then somebody over there leaked to the Washington Post a whole bunch of details about it to try to make their case. And as a result, we've learned a lot more that, in fact, they are protecting a top secret intelligence source, probably someone with some overseas connections to intelligence agencies, somebody who was clearly involved in the collusion probe. And you and I know when people talk about sources, they're not talking about internal FBI agents. They're talking about people who sit outside. They pose as average citizens, but they use their positions or their credentials or their job to then spy on people and report back to their taskmaster.
And in this particular case, that would have been inside the Trump campaign.
Well, either inside or more likely, if the person is who I suspect it is, somebody who interacted with Trump campaign officials.
Well, let me ask you this. Would it be initials that I personally would be familiar with?
That's an interesting question, and I neither confirm nor deny. But look, there's a lot of names out there. I think a lot of people have done a lot of very good reporting since mine. I'm not going out with a name because I haven't had it officially confirmed.
We respect you for that, but you know, I guess we all have our own sources here, and we're probably all hearing the same thing.
Yes.
Although it's obvious that you've done a lot. You did a very deep dive into all of this. I want to talk about what you called intense obstructionism. And what you're really discussing here is the Department of Justice, their slow walking of subpoenaed documents by Congress. Congress, we have a checks and balance system, co-equal branches of government. They have constitutional oversight authority, and they have been extremely uncooperative as it relates to turning over these subpoenaed documents. Slow walking is one method. Redactions in the name of national security that turn out not to be national security issues later. In one case, that was Jim Comey. It was redacted that he had believed General Flynn. That's not a national security issue. That's an embarrassment issue for them. But that's what they said was the reason why they had redacted it. And the other thing is just outright not cooperating in any way, shape, manner, or form and saying no. It seems to now be hitting a very critical point. What are Congress's options here, I guess, besides holding Sessions and Rosenstein in contempt of Congress?
Well, it can be no coincidence, Sean, that about the time that that letter that Nunes sent went over there, suddenly we saw the pushback kicked up about 10 notches. Up until then, the Department of Justice, they'd slow walked things, as you said. They'd not been responsive. They'd redacted. But we saw an all-out campaign. This is when we suddenly got Rod Rosenstein accusing Congress of extortion and giving speeches out to law schools about how Congress, how the Department of Justice has a constitutional duty to not let Congress look at these documents. So they clearly, Devin Nunes is over the target, and there is something very embarrassing for the FBI here that they do not want to have come out. But look, if there's going to be another meeting this week between Congressman Nunes and Gowdy and the Department of Justice. If they don't get to see what they have demanded to see, I think the House has to move immediately to contempt, and maybe even hold out the prospect of impeachment. These are the tools that were given to them to require the opposing branches of government to conform to constitutional requirements, and they may have to go down that road.
And the Freedom Caucus in particular has already drawn up articles of impeachment as it relates to Rod Rosenstein, and I have a question about him. I've always viewed him as a very conflicted person in all of this. We would never have gotten the Nunes memo because Rod Rosenstein, again, they slow-walked it up to the midnight hour of the day that they were mandated to release this information, and he was inside of the Speaker Paul Ryan's office begging that Paul Ryan not turn over the information that ultimately became the Nunes memo that literally made us all aware of massive FISA abuses, and then the Grassley-Graham memo subsequently telling us as well that the bulk of the application for the FISA warrant to spy on the Trump campaign came from the uncorroborated, unverified dossier of a foreign agent, Christopher Steele, that Hillary Clinton paid for, that cites Russians and a lot of Russian sources that have been debunked. So my question about Rod is, you know, Rod signed off on one of those FISA warrants, one of the subsequent warrants. Rod Rosenstein would be, you know, witness number one as to was there obstruction when President Trump fired Comey, and Rod Rosenstein is the guy that's leading the way in slow walking everything. Yet he's in the most powerful position in this case.
Correct. And this is why, look, I've argued all along that Donald Trump simply needs to declassify all of this information, because those who are currently sitting at the stranglehold of this and deciding what gets released and what does not are all conflicted in some degree. Look, people are trying to protect the Department of Justice and the FBI's reputation, which may be a knee-jerk reaction and something an institutionalist would do. But that is not helping us get to the bottom of this question. And because, look, too, it goes even beyond, I think, what you very eloquently laid out, which is that Rod Rosenstein was a guy who created, as it were, special counsel Bob Mueller. Now, if it comes out that the FBI was far more complicit, if they set people up, as Devin Nunes said, then this entire thing is a house of cards. There never should have been any reason to have appointed special counsel Mueller. How much did Rod Rosenstein know about that and this secret source and what went on in the FBI? This thing could really be, I think, quite explosive if and when they finally get the information they're seeking.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back more with the Wall Street Journal's Kimberly Strassel and your calls. And Donald Trump speaks to the families of police officers and those brave men and women that protect us every day. That's straight ahead. All right, as we continue with Kimberly Strassel, she's with the Wall Street Journal. And did we have an FBI mole inside of the Trump campaign? I was a little shocked at the report last week that we didn't know the extent to which Comey had met with the special counsel, Robert Mueller, and seemingly coordinating their stories. Now, why do I believe let's say you had two mob guys that were under investigation and they meet at some particular point and they're talking for a long period of time and one of them goes in to testify, doesn't it look a lot like they're coordinating stories? I thought that was the appearance of that was beyond every ethical line that I think never should be crossed.
Yeah, the dumbest moment I've decided of my thinking last year, and I have plenty of dumb moments, Sean, but I've decided.
No, Kim, I'm a talk show host. Nobody has dumber moments than talk show hosts. Trust me.
But my all-time dumb moment was last May when Special Counsel Mueller was appointed, and I actually thought for a brief second that perhaps he was, as part of his investigation, going to look into what the FBI did. I think now in retrospect, we realize how ridiculous that is. He surrounded himself there by people who were involved in the Department of Justice, who had their own hands on that probe. He clearly is tight with, or certainly maintains respect for, Jim Comey, and is certainly taking his view of everything that happened as just a non-negotiable. And, you know, so he's not going to be a neutral arbiter in any way. And so we're also not going to get answers about what the FBI and Department of Justice did in 2016 from him. Again, going back to my point, the only way we get this in the end is for President Trump to either order it released or somehow put something in position, an outside person whose job it is to release these documents.
Let me ask you about Andy McCarthy. I think he's been doing a great job, and he had a piece over
he's
the
great.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the writing department, I mean, you guys have been amazing. And I, frankly, we built our little team, and we got to add you guys to this team because the information you're both providing is you know, it's like information overload every day. But he wrote about Simpson, the co-founder of Fusion GPS, and he wrote about the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing in August of 2017 that the former British intelligence officer Steele had told him that the FBI had this spy in the Trump campaign. Now, when you look at the spy in the Trump campaign, you look at the FISA warrants that were granted, you know, on false information, unverified, uncorroborated, bought and paid for by put together by a foreign national with Russian sources and lies. You know, that didn't just happen one time. That had to be renewed every 3 months. There were three subsequent renewals. That is a full year of FISA judges being lied to and not told where the origins of this came from. I mean, to me, that is one of the biggest crimes in all of this, if we believe in our Fourth Amendment rights and any constitutional rights at this point.
Well, think, too, not only was the court not told originally where the dossier came from, but we now know that Christopher Steele, its author, was fired by the FBI for deliberately breaking their rule, telling him, do not go and talk to the press. And not only did he hand off that dossier and then immediately go for a round of press briefings with Glenn Simpson out there, I mean, their goal was to get this out there and use it for nefarious political purposes and work against the presidential candidate, Donald Trump. So they were using the FBI for those purposes, their own political purposes. FBI finds out, fires Steele. They never went back in any of those subsequent FISA court applications and told them that their so-called credible source, which is what they referred to him in that FISA, had to be dismissed. How credible.
Well, they never told him that. And I think the most amazing part of James Comey's Let Me Pat Myself on the Back book tour is that to this day, he doesn't have any clue if what was in the dossier is true. But as the Grassley Graham memo points out, that was the bulk of the application to spy on a Trump campaign associate in the lead up to an election paid for by an opposition party candidate.
If we're to believe him, Sean, given that book tour, he claims not to have known anything really about the source other than that he was credible. He claims not to have known that he was fired. He claims not to have known who paid for this in the end. I mean, at a certain point, this just strains credulity. The FBI is staging one of the most explosive counterintelligence probes in ever, and they're basing it on largely one document, and they claim to have done no follow-up whatsoever about the person who gave it to him, who paid him, what his motivations are, and what his subsequent actions were.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have to take a break. We have to say goodbye. We're actually out of time. Kimberly Strassel, we're going to link this column to our website, Hannity.com. Keep up the good work, and we really appreciate your time, and thanks for being with us.
You too, Sean. Thank you.
All right, 800-941-SEAN is our number if you want to be a part of the program. The president actually gave an unbelievably amazing speech, moving address, about the loss and the sacrifice that our law enforcement officials make for our safety every day. And we're going to play that coming up in just a few minutes.
Show.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. You know, there's something we don't do enough of in this country. We don't honor, we don't praise, we don't give credit to those people in the military, in law enforcement, our first responders, our firemen, our policemen, our paramedics, our military people. These people literally create the safe environments for us every day, including Border Patrol people. We played a part of this earlier. Now, the president gave a very moving address on the loss and sacrifice of so many officers that do it to protect and serve us. You're going to hear a lot about Ferguson, Missouri, even though look what happened in the end. We were right and everybody else was wrong. And then, of course, Baltimore, Freddie Gray, same thing. All those officers are going to be convicted. We got a lot of coverage of that, but we don't get a lot of coverage of the people that make us, that protect and serve us every single day. And the families that lose their loved ones because of their sacrifice. They sacrifice too. Anyway, so I want to play a big portion of this speech that the president gave. Very emotional, very moving speech. And then somebody over at CNN tweeted out, oh, Trump points to the heavens, and they put it in green, and it looked like, did you see that tweet? I'm not even going to deal with it. It speaks volumes about just how corrupt our media is. Anyway, here's the president from earlier today.
This morning, I especially want to speak to the young sons and daughters who join us here today. I want you to know that your moms and dads were among the bravest Americans to ever live. When danger came, when darkness fell, when destruction loomed, they did not flinch. They were not afraid. They did not falter. They stared down danger, raced down alleys, chased down criminals, kicked down doors, and faced down evil. Brave. And they did it all with courage, with dignity, with pride, with love for their nation, and with love for their families. They lived every day of their lives by that most sacred calling, to serve and protect. Their immortal legacy lives on in each and every one of you. Their strength lives in your soul, their courage glows in your heart, and their blood flows in your veins. And today, every American heart bleeds blue. That's for sure. This morning, I want to share with you, the American people, a few stories about the heroes we have gathered to celebrate and remember. With us today is the family of Lieutenant Aaron Allen, Special, of the Southport Police Department in Indiana, his wife Stacy, and his two sons, TJ and Aaron. Where are they? Where are they? Where are they? Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Lieutenant Allen was an Air Force veteran. After his service, he followed his childhood dream to become a police officer. He served in law enforcement for 20 years. No job was too great. No job was too small. He took extra shifts at night, and he was always available. He stopped by to say hello to members of his community. During Christmas time, he took children in need shopping for presents. He was always there for anybody that needed him. In 2015, he was given the Officer of the Year Award after saving two lives. Last year, Lieutenant Allen walked his son to the bus for his first day of kindergarten. Just hours later, Lieutenant Allen was shot and killed in the line of duty. Since then, the whole Southport community has come together to support the Allen family. And I hear that if you go to the police station, you'll find that six-year-old Aaron Jr. And he's up there, and he's giving orders. And he is respected and loved by everybody there. And his father was a true hero. To Stacy, TJ, and Aaron, today, all of America sends you our love and our support. Allen will live in our hearts forever. Thank you. Incredible man. Today we are also joined by Savannah and Isaiah Hartfield, along with their amazing mom, Veronica. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We honor their father and husband, Officer Charles Hartfield, of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. As many of you remember, Officer Hartfield was off duty attending a concert with Veronica when that horrible shooting began in Las Vegas last October. Officer Hartfield, an Army veteran, immediately leapt into action, rescuing the wounded and shielding the innocent. You all read about it. I remember it so well. As he did, he was shot and killed by rounds of gunfire. He knew he was right in the path, and it made no difference. He gave his life so that countless others could live. Savannah and Isaiah, your dad was a guardian angel to those in need. Now he is keeping watch on you from heaven. A very special family and a very special man. Thank you. Thank you very much. Also here with us today is the family of Border Patrol agent Rogelio Martinez from El Paso, Texas. Agent Martinez, known as Roger to his friends and family, worked on a dangerous part of the southern border, a part that you've been reading about so much lately, and a part that we're doing a lot with. Agent Martinez took immense pride and joy in serving his country. As a Border Patrol agent, he was extremely proud of what he did. Every day he would go to work and risk his life to keep America safe. Roger said he wanted to prevent terrorists and drugs from coming into our country. We all do, and we're going to get it done. But that's exactly what he did. He bravely confronted the cartels, the smugglers, the human traffickers, the gangs that threaten our communities. One night last November, Agent Martinez died in the line of duty. It was horrific. It was violent. And he was brave. To Agent Martinez's mom, Eliva, his son, Sergio, and the entire Martinez family, Roger's profound and unselfish love of country is an inspiration to every American, everybody here and everybody here, and to me, I can tell you, a great inspiration. Thank you. We will always remember Agent Martinez, and we will honor his noble sacrifice by continuing his vital mission. The first duty of government is to protect our citizens, and the men and women of DHS are on the front lines of this incredible, heroic fight. That is why we are calling on Congress to secure our borders, support our border agents, stop sanctuary cities, and shut down policies that release violent criminals back into our communities. We don't want it any longer. We've had it. Enough is enough. Recently, MS-13 gang members called for the assassination of New York City police officers so the gang could, quote, take back the streets. They got it wrong. We are the ones who are taking back the streets. We are getting them out of our country by the thousands. Every week we're setting new records on, we have a catch and release program too. It's called We Catch Them and We Release Them in the Country They Came Back From. We're getting them out. or we're putting them in prison. The Trump administration has a policy, and it's very clear. We will protect those who protect us and who do such a great job in protecting us. That is why, as I promised all along, that we are allowing local police to access the surplus military equipment they need to protect our officers and law enforcement agents and save their lives. And they are taking equipment at a record clip, millions and millions of dollars of surplus equipment is going to our police departments. If we want to bring down violent crime, then we must stand up for our police. We must confront and condemn dangerous anti-police prejudice. Can you believe this prejudice with respect to our police? We're not going to let bad things happen to our police. So we must show appreciation, gratitude, and respect for those who police our streets and patrol our communities. In 2016, an officer was assaulted in America on an average of every 10 minutes. Can you believe that? It's outrageous and it's unacceptable. We must end the attacks on our police, and we must end them right now. We believe criminals who kill our police should get the death penalty. Bring it forth. One of the most alarming crimes taking place against our police are ambush attacks. Think of that, ambush attacks. I have directed the Justice Department to do everything in its power to defend the lives of American law enforcement. We are honored to be joined today by the family of Detective Miocitis Familia. Detective Familia was a proud member of the New York Police Department. Where is that family? Where is that great family? Great family. Thank you so much. Can you come up here? This is a great... Come up here, please. Come on. I'd like to have this family. New York Police Department, close to my heart. Come on. Can you open those gates, please? You lost mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, sons and daughters, and America lost incredible heroes. But they will endure forever, forever and ever. You know that. They're going to endure forever. She's going to endure forever. She will endure forever. In our memories, in our hearts, and in the countless lives they touched through their courage and through their grace, their legacy will never die. Your mom's legacy will never, ever die. Thanks again to all of our wonderful police, our sheriffs, and all of law enforcement and law enforcement officers. You're incredible people. You are the finest. You are the greatest. You are our heroes. God bless you. God bless our fallen heroes. God bless their families, and God bless America. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, that was the president earlier today, a very moving address about the loss, the sacrifice of officers and those that create a safe environment for us and our kids every day. And we don't give enough attention to them, ever. All right, Hannity, tonight on the Fox News Channel, we will have the very latest Mueller's conflict as it relates to the Russian oligarch. Then, of course, we have the total, complete collapse of the special counsel investigation. Full details, Greg Jarrett. Sarah Carter tonight. Jason Chaffetz will join us. Also, Joe Concha on our corrupt media, Dan Bongino, and Jesse and Jessica, and much more. That's all coming up tonight. Hannity, 9 Eastern, set your DVR, Fox News.